So thank you for joining us at Geek Church this morning, and this is our third or fourth here. I think third. As we've been doing this, and one of the things that I enjoy the fact of just getting this opportunity to be a part of this, to share, is, so the question today I'm just going to ask you is how do you define success? Like, how do you define when something is worthwhile? How do you define success? And we've got some different movies and stuff up here on the screen with this. And one of the things that noticed, like, for you personally, you don't, this isn't a right or wrong answer. For a movie to be successful to you, what matters more? Your review of it, critical review of it, box office, or awards? Like, what's makes a movie, for you to say a movie's good, what's the best thing for you to say? Like, if a movie doesn't receive any awards but makes a lot of money, does that make it good? What about you? Yeah.
If it's good to me, like, if I like it, that's how I define if it's good or not.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's my preference.
Right. And that's what, like, it's all going to end up boiling down to what you say with it, but sometimes that affects stuff.
Yeah. Right.
And so, like, one of the things that I've noticed is, like, sometimes a movie can be a box office failure, but be a critical success. Sometimes a movie can be a critical failure, but a box office success. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a movie can be a critical failure and a box office failure and still win Academy Awards. Point of reference, my all-time favorite movie is Almost Famous. The musical based on the life of Cameron Crowe. All-time favorite movie. Like, I don't have any tattoos yet for no reason, just lazy. But, like, one of the first tattoos I would get is a tattoo from Almost Famous of You Are Home.
Yes,
but
sir.
There's a line in Almost Famous that's one of my favorite lines in anything where, like, he's saying, I've got to go home, and Kate Hudson looks at the main character and just says, you are home. And just, like, something about that, like, it hit me at the time in my life where I literally just moved out of my house, lost one of my parents, had no idea what I was doing with my life, and, like, that line just, like, wrecked me, and it's always been my favorite, like, to the point where they opened a Broadway musical of Almost Famous in October. And the minute they announced it, I didn't hesitate. I straight up, I've never gone to Broadway before, like, intentionally, like I have for work. But the minute they announced there was an Almost Famous musical, I didn't think twice. I didn't ask anybody. I didn't check with the rest of my family. I just bought a ticket to the very first showing. I bought a plane ticket. I was just like, I don't care what anybody else is doing. I'm going to this. Because my family's, you know, all about Dear Evan Hansen and Hamilton and all these other things. I'm like, nope, this one's mine. And sure enough, I bought a ticket to Almost Famous. And it confused me that Almost Famous would become a Broadway musical, because Almost Famous was a box office failure. Like, it was a low-budget movie and still failed at the box office. But it won an Academy Award for Best Screenplay. So even though it was a box office failure, it still was received as one of the best written things out there. And it's mattered to me, but in true to form, the Broadway show failed too. The Broadway show lasted from, the previews were October to November. The show ran from November to January and out. Like January 8th, it was over. But that's the thing, to me, it's important. But to a lot of people, it's a failure, and, you know, all the Broadway reviews were, like, pretty trash for it, too. I loved it. It was my favorite thing I've ever seen. It's also the only thing I've seen on Broadway. So, but with that perspective, but that's the thing, too. One of my other favorite films of all time is Scott Pilgrim. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, another huge box office failure, but it's one of my favorite movies to watch, period, ever. Like, I can put that on and enjoy it anytime. In that same token, Shazam Fury of the Gods. Now, we're going to talk a little about Zachary Levi today and kind of his journey and some stuff. But I've been a Zachary Levi fan most of my life. One of the first things I ever saw of Zachary Levi, even before I really watched him on Chuck or anything, was that when he was in L.A. filming Chuck, he hosted house churches. That's literally was my introduction to who he was as a person, was that he had a big house in L.A. that they were renting out, and he would let people come in and run house churches out of there for actors and stuff like that. I just thought it was so cool. And I've supported, like, if he does something, I'm going to show up. I've been that way forever, and I actually really love the first Shazam movie, so it was, you know, mandatory in my household. If you live in my house, we're watching Shazam within the first week in the theaters. But nobody else got the memo. Because it currently is sitting at one of the worst debuts for financially for any DC movie. Like, Green Lantern did better. And per capita, like when you factor in inflation and everything else from that point to this point, Green Lantern did better cinematically than Shazam 2. Now, we're only 10 to like a week and a half out from it, but they're already announcing when it's coming to digital because they've basically given up on it. Now, here's the thing. I saw it. I thought it was great. I enjoyed it. I had a great time with it. I was warm fuzzies, all the things. I was happy about it. But just because I thought it was good doesn't mean anything. And Zachary Levi went live. As we were setting up here on Thursday night, Zachary Levi went live on Instagram saying, "Hey, watch the movie." He did some other encouraging things. He was saying a lot of other stuff. But he's like, "Please watch the movie." And he was polite. And, you know, he was saying, "Don't blame this person. Don't blame that person. But watch the movie." And it's just one of those things, too. And then, you know, I didn't put it up there, but people weren't exactly happy with Black Adam, like in a lot of ways, and financially it didn't do what it was expected to do. And one of the biggest blows for Black Adam was that it's in its entire theatrical run, Black Panther 2 did in one day. The day Black Panther 2 premiered, it made the entire box office run of Black Adam in one day, and it immediately followed it, you know, in that capacity. And so it's just like, nope, nobody approves you, nobody likes you. And it can be in that capacity with stuff like that. And then you've got things like Everything Everywhere All at Once had like no budget, made five times its budget, and then won a bajillion Academy Awards, Golden Globes and everything, not Golden Globes, but yeah, Golden Globes too, everything in between. So success is very determined. More than anything, one of the things I think we end up understanding is that we often define success based on the response of other people. We often define success based on how other people do something or how other people receive what we do. How many of you have ever been in a place where you just felt like there was nobody that supported you, nobody that believed in you, nobody that understood you, and because nobody else gave you that affirmation, you felt like you were less of a person? And you might be doing the greatest thing, but with nobody seeing it, nobody giving you a response to it, you can feel like you don't have a place. You can feel like you're dislodged. You can feel like there's nothing for you out there. And I think that's a space that where a lot of us end up feeling is because nobody's supporting us, because nobody's encouraging us, we don't have value. And, you know, when it comes to things like this for movies and stuff like that, it's a really fickle business because you can invest. You got to think about it. Jimmy Fallon was criticized and did an interview about 2 weeks ago because people said that he liked everything. It's like, you know, it didn't matter what people did. He's, you know, he was accused of just liking everything. And he said, "Listen, do you know what it's like to spend 6 months of your life pouring some into something daily, 2 months of your life promoting it, and then watching the whole world ruin it and say that it wasn't worth your time?" He's like, that's devastating to people. So he said that he's always going to show up and support whatever people are bringing. And I'm going to tell you that that's a healthy thing to do for people, is to be that support. But one of the hardest things is when we only take our worth based on what other people say, it can leave us very empty when we don't get the approval of other people and other people don't actually support it. And that's one of the things that's also really hurtful with stuff like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but when things like TikTok, you put a video up and you expect, all right, this is going to get a bajillion views and nothing happens, or you do something stupid and it goes viral. Like, it's that counter thing of it. Like, I had an idea for something that I thought was going to be my TikTok legacy. I had an idea. I was like, this is going to be the greatest thing I ever do on TikTok. It's going to be the best. So I bought a mandolin. Wrong word. We're going to get there because it does have a point. We're going to get there. So I bought a mandolin. And I had the idea, I was like, I'm going to make a Mandalorian mandolin. So I did the whole thing of like all the smooth transitions and, you know, good lighting and everything else of where I started with a mandolin, sanded it down, did all things, painted it, and made it look like the front side of it was Mando's helmet. And the back side had the mythosaur symbol on it. And like it looked smooth. The instrument's gorgeous. And I did this whole video. I was like, this thing's going to be great. This is going to blow up. It's going to be gold. Like 12 views and like one like. I'm like, oh. Then the same week, I caught a gas station alarm going off, and it looked like it was having a rave. 2 million views. I invested myself heavily in something and got no affirmation. I was driving late at night and saw a gas station and got all the praise I never wanted. If we only define our success based on what other people give us, we're going to feel isolated and we're going to feel lonely and we're going to feel like that we aren't enough sometimes in who we are. But one of the hardest parts about living by praise is this: all applause eventually stops. Doesn't matter how long somebody claps, eventually there's going to be silence, and at the end of it, you need to be okay with who you are as a person. You need to be okay with who you are and your identity and your accomplishments and who you are in your own skin. You need to be able to be okay with that. And listen, if we're living by the praise of other people to be okay with ourselves, we're going to feel like failures. Because even if we constantly get praise, we end up being, eventually that praise is going to stop. Even if we're doing the best things. And we'll talk, I think, yeah. So there's a verse I want to share, and this is one of my check myself verses all the time. Galatians 1:10 says, "Am I now trying to win the approval of human beings or of God? Or am I trying to please people? If I were still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ." Now, I know not everybody's a minister, not everybody's about trying to serve God or anything like that, but there's a truth in that. If you're trying to live for the approval of people, you are trying to find your value in something that will always run shallow and will always change and will be fickle and change like the wind. The beauty of the fact that if we're living based on the approval of God is you'd never earn that. You don't earn God's approval. You don't do anything to get that. You have the love, the support, the compassion, the grace of God extended towards you because of how good he is, not because of what you accomplish. And that we also, even in the biblical world, we get in the idea where we have to earn the approval of God even while we've received him. And that's another lie we tell ourselves that leaves us empty and that leaves us in that capacity. This verse for me is always been a check because, you know, for when I have a rule when I do cons is I never count money until I'm home. I never check my sales until I'm home. I never do anything like that because if I gauge the value of what I'm doing while I'm here based on what other people think is worth buying at a show, if it's a bad show financially, I could feel pretty worthless. Or it could change my heart. It could change my attitude. If you don't know what I do, I'm here just because I want to be able to connect with y'all and be able to encourage people in that capacity. If I sell stuff, cool. If I don't, it's okay. But if I do that, if I gauge solely based on finances, I'm going to end up distressing myself with that. Now, that's no shade. Like my man Genesis here, he's here to make money, right? Correct? Yeah. Genesis has a 3D printing art business a couple aisles over from me. Genesis is here to make money. That's his business. That's what he here's for. And if he doesn't make money this weekend, he'll be sad. For me, I am not here for the sales. I'm not here for the approval of people. I'm here because I want to be able to connect people in God in that capacity. But it's, what are you here for? Like, what do you gauge your success by? And if you can come to the place where you are comfortable with who you are, not because of what praise other people give you, but because you know how God feels about you, even without doing anything, there's a security in that. There's a stability in that that we won't find in other places. So I met Zachary Levi in 2017, August of 2017. I went to Dragon Con, I met him there, and bless you. I went to Dragon Con, I met him there, and he was doing because he's a very cheerful person at capacity, he's like, hey, like the warm fuzzy thing. And as I met him, you know, he was giving everybody a good spiel. You know how people are, you pay people to meet them, you know, they're gonna be nice to you, usually. If not, you had a sad experience, but I've seen those too. And so when I met Zach, you know, he had finished Heroes. He had done Tangled. He had done a lot of big stuff at that point. And so I was shaking his hands like, hey, I really enjoyed your article in Relevant Magazine about your church plants. He's like, bro, God bless you. like the whole facade of like, hey, drop. And he's like, God bless you. And he gave me a hug, and I was like, and you know, I wasn't there trying to proselytize Zachary Levi, or you know, thinking I was gonna have some magic moment where I, you know, had an altar call prayer with Zachary Levi at a con. I was like, hey dude, I wrote a Bible study about your show Chuck. Could I give it to you? He's like, I would freaking love that. And so I gave it to him, and we had that moment. Now, fast forward, that was 2017. This year, or at the end of 22, he put out a book called Radical Love. And it was a kind of a sort of biography of this point in his life. What I didn't realize is that right, literally, within 3 weeks of that time I had met him, he had just gotten out, and this isn't gossip, this is in his book. Within 3 weeks of the time I met him, he had just gotten out of an institution that he had checked himself into because he was mentally falling apart. He was at the place where he felt at the lowest he had ever felt. He felt like he was worthless. He felt like nothing he had done was worthwhile. And that he checked himself in because he couldn't function. And then 3 weeks later, I meet him in this capacity. And, you know, nobody that saw him thinks, you know, oh, this guy's broken. Nobody saw that because, listen, if you're living for the success of people or if you're living for the praise of people, you often end up putting on a show because people aren't going to give you more love and praise if they see that you are broken. Oftentimes, they'll praise things that are already doing well. You can't, you know, if you went to David Tennant's booth and he's like, I'm just feeling pretty low today, you're probably not going to get, you know, that's not going to be the same experience as a hello and, you know, do all that. It's not the same thing. Side note, one of my favorite David Tennant stories. Yeah, I'm telling it. Enjoy this. My daughter back there that was up here running stuff, we met David Tennant in 2015, and she was six, and he spoke to her, and she passed out. Like, we just done a photo op. He spoke to her. She passed out, and then he picked her up, dusted her off. He's like, hello, it's okay. And, like, and, you know, that's one of those things, like, it was such an interesting experience, but listen, I didn't go to David Tennant expecting childcare, but he was cool with that. When you meet people, you aren't expecting them to get their brokenness, you're expecting them to put on a show. Like, they're expecting to put on a show. He was putting on a show that day for people because of those things. Now, the thing that, you know what sent him into the place where he checked himself into that facility? Guardians of the Galaxy. What I didn't know until I read his book is that Chris Pratt had originally turned down the role of Star-Lord. Guess who their second choice was? They went to the point of fittings, testing him out that he was going to be Star-Lord. And so when Chris Pratt came back and said, you know what, I'm going to do it. Yoink. And just took it from him. Went back to Chris Pratt. Now, here's the thing. There's no shade on Chris Pratt on that. I'd take the job, too. But it left him to the point where he felt like he was always a second choice. He was never worth it. And this, listen, he didn't think that his role in Tangled mattered. Dude, it's my favorite Disney movie, my favorite Disney prince. A goofy movie, but, you know, whatever. And, you know, all those things. But he felt like he didn't matter in that capacity. And that it took him actually learning to see value in himself to be able to actually stop depending on other people. And listen, that's what, when I saw that Shazam 2 was doing bad, I'm like, I need you to be okay. I reached out to him on Instagram, not like he's going to talk to me or anything, but I reached out, I was like, hey, bro, I'm praying for you. I know it's a rough emotional time in this. And he addressed that in his Facebook Live. He's like, for y'all that have been checking on me, I'm okay. Because he knew that people that read his book would be concerned about this. But so often we'll end up in a place where we think because I don't get a certain amount of praise that I'm worth less. But I'm going to tell you this, God looks at you in your most broken and sees you at your most valuable because of how good he is. And there's nothing you have to do to earn that. I don't have the slide of the scripture up there, but Romans 5:8 says that God demonstrates his love for us and while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. There's no other value of worth that you can ascribe that's bigger than that. And you are worth it, and regardless of what you succeed in and what you fail in, there's not. But we need to come to a place where we have a rejection of rejection, where we stop letting how people reject us make us reject ourselves. We need to stand against, we need to come to a place where you know your worth based on who God says you are, to the place where no rejection is going to make you doubt that. I mentioned this yesterday, that literally as soon as we set up on Friday, someone here at the show was posting on our page saying, y'all shouldn't be allowed to be here and you should be banned. And I was like, hey, I'm open to a conversation if you'd like to talk about it, but it's okay. It's like, I'm not mad at them. I get, you know, having a perspective. But I was like, it made like it literally put me in a funk for 10 minutes where I looked at my phone and like the world just ended. Like, someone doesn't like me. And I make a joke about it, but literally, I'm like that. I was like, oh, someone doesn't like me, and it wrecked my whole thing. And I had to put myself in check with that to be able to say, am I determining my value based on what one person at this show thinks or what everyone thinks? Or what, not what everyone thinks, or am I basing it on what God thinks? And so that's one of the things is you have to be able to place where you can reject the rejection of others. Because what people celebrate doesn't always equal success, doesn't equal value, doesn't worth, because people will celebrate dumb junk. I will watch stupid videos all day long. The videos of like kids like almost falling off of something or, we'll watch stupid videos because they're entertaining, but just because people celebrate it doesn't make it valuable. And if we can learn to be actually say, you know what, I accept my value based on who God says I am, then you're going to be in a better place to be able to be emotionally, spiritually healthy in that capacity. So if you see this is a verse in Isaiah 6:8. And real quick, before I forget to do this, because I forget this all the time, if you don't mind, I'm going to take a picture of y'all. Say hi.
Hi.
Sweet. Okay. So this is a very popular verse. This is like a verse Mercy Me sings songs about. You know, this is one of those. It's an everybody verse. Okay, so check this out. Isaiah 6:8 says, "Then I heard a voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? And I said, here am I, send me." This is the prophet Isaiah. God says, all right. And if you read previously in this, the presence of God comes in this place. Isaiah's like, I shouldn't be here. I'm not worthy for this. And God asks this question, who can I send? Who will go for me? And Isaiah says, I'll go, send me. Now, usually that's where we stop in this story. This is, oh yeah, look at him, he's faithful. Like, he's so good. Listen, this was a prophet of God. His job was to deliver the messages of God. And if we were to look at, if we were to base on success, Isaiah is a failure. And here's why. Look at what comes next. He said, go and tell the people, or tell this to the people. Be ever hearing, but never understanding. Be ever seeing, but never perceiving. Make the heart of the people calloused, make their ears dull and close their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn and be healed. Then I said, for how long, Lord? Now, there's a long passage in Isaiah. Read this all for context, okay? We don't have enough time for me to go through this whole chapter in context. But what you need to understand was God was saying, I know your hearts. I know what you're going to do. I'm not sending Isaiah to tell you to change because I know you won't. I know you won't listen. I know you won't obey. And God sent Isaiah to say, you're not going to do anything, and your whole world's going to get wrecked until you're demolished, and then you'll turn back, and I'll give you another chance. Isaiah's message was to say, hey, guys, you all suck, and you're not going to get any better. If we were to base Isaiah's message and the response of that message the way we base success in today's world, Isaiah would have failed. There was no turnaround. There was no great dramatic success. If it was based like on church attendance or an event, he failed because he didn't get what we would consider success. He didn't deliver a message that produced response in people. He delivered the message that he was supposed to do, and he did it faithfully. So here's the question. By the world's success, Isaiah was a failure. Isaiah faithfully did what God told him to do, so he was a success. So often, if we are in a place in our season in our life where we're on that Isaiah path where God wants us to do something that doesn't get a lot of praise of people, we consider ourselves failures. But if we do stuff that gets praise of people, we think we're successful. We need to be able to be in the place where we can say, God, here am I, send me. Because listen, notice, when you go back to this passage, Isaiah never asked what the message was. Isaiah didn't ask, yeah, God, I'll go, what am I talking about first? Yeah, God, I'll do it. Let me know. Isaiah said, whatever it is, I'm down. He signed up without questioning how much glory he would get for it. Listen, this isn't one of the stories where people like straight up tell about, famous. VeggieTales never did this one, right? It's like, this wasn't one of those stories that got a lot of praise or, sing-alongs or anything like this. This is like saying, hey, my people aren't doing right. Go tell them they're not going to listen and leave. We shouldn't just consider our success based on the response of others. And when we can get into the place where we can be faithful with who we are and what God is doing in our lives, even without the response of others, it will help us to be more grounded and more centered in who we are. Because check this out, faithfulness with what you have is greater than success, applause, and approval. If you can be faithful where you are with what God has given you and how God has called you to live, you're going to be able to have a greater sense of who you are than if you're simply basing it on what other people say and what other people do. One of my favorite verses to also keep myself in check, because I need to be in check a lot, Luke 16:10, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. Whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. If you, in other translations, say whoever is faithful with little will be faithful with much. If you can be comfortable, confident, and secure in the small things that God's called you to do in your life, then you can be comfortable, confident in the big things. But if you think that you're only going to be able to be a better version of you when more people give you praise and acknowledgement, you're never going to get there. You got to be able to say, you know what, I can take the humble route. I can take it where I don't have to have other people's applause to think I have worth and to think I have value. Because if you can be confident and comfortable knowing that God's worth in you is more than anybody else's praise, that's a beautiful thing. Yesterday, Ashley took a picture of a cosplayer that was dressed as Luna Lovegood from Harry Potter. Dope headpiece. She'd like made this great headpiece. And Ashley said the lady told her nobody had taken her picture. This was like late in the day on Saturday, and she said nobody had taken her photo yet. And I can tell you, as I'm not like a professional cosplayer, but I've cosplayed too. And if people don't ask you to take your photo, you're like, what did I do wrong? Did I not do something right? Why aren't people taking my photo? And you know, not that cosplayers do it solely for attention, but you'd like some. You would like to be recognized for your effort and that people actually appreciate it. And that lady was, you know, you could tell that lady was a little sad that nobody had taken her photo. Y'all, we need to be able to say, you know, it doesn't matter how many people respond to what I do. I'm confident in who God is and what he's done in my life with that. Last verse I want to share with you is this. It's Colossians 3:23. It says, whatever you do, do it with all your heart, working for God, not for men. And whether it's cosplay, whether it's how you are faithful in your family, whether it's your work, whether it's your passions and everything else, if you can do whatever you do with all your heart, if God is the only approval you seek, you will be stronger in it, you will be more secure in it, and you will have a better foundation in it. Because if you're waiting on people to approve you, to give you value, you will always come up short. Because people will get distracted, they will applaud something else, or they'll just forget you in that capacity. And I'm not saying that to be like emo and negative about it, but it's you can't base your worth on something that's passing. But God has told you definitely and directly, you have value. You have worth, you are loved, you are welcomed, you are wanted, and you have a arms wide open stance where God is ready to embrace you no matter how far you've gone or what you've done. So please understand your worth is not based solely on others. One of the things I love, and I'm going to wrap up this, watching this season for A24, for Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Whale, stuff like that, if you watch these actors as they were talking about their performances, they were 100% confident and secure in what the work they had created before they got awards. If you watch their interviews, if you watch the cast talk about it, they were satisfied in the performance they gave before they won a single award. Now, am I happy they won all the awards? Yes, I am. I was born in the 80s, grew up in the 90s. I was raised on Brendan Fraser. I had short round action figures, like from Indiana Jones. I loved those guys. I was happy for them. But the thing I loved is that they were secure in what they made and confident no matter who gave them applause for it. When we can become confident and secure in who God is and what he's done for us, we can be secure in that. Last verse as we close, because our time is up. Matthew 25:23 says, his master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Like, listen, I love approval. I like Facebook likes. I like going viral on TikTok. I like all that stuff. But my favorite thing I want to know is that when, at the end of my time, God can say, well done. Not because of anything I accomplished, but because of what I was faithful with what he gave me. And I would encourage you, learn to be confident and faithful in what he's given you, so that you can actually enjoy everything else in that process. Our time is up, and I need to be respectful of the next panel coming in. If you would like to talk more, I'll be at my booth the rest of the day. It's booth I-1, aisle 16. I'll be there if you want to hang out and talk. Thank you for being a part of the day. I really appreciate y'all.